Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey folks, I'm Alex Dowd.
And I'm Katie Rife.
Mortal Kombat is back on the big screen, or if you have HBO Max, on the small screen. On this special bonus episode of the podcast, we're talking about the latest cinematic iteration of the fighting game franchise. Is it a flawless victory or a fatality? Listen to us battle it out now. No quarters required.
Welcome to Film Club.
Okay, folks, welcome again to Film Club. We are doing a special episode. If you listened this week, we did a full episode where we talked about video game adaptations in general, why they often suck, is Hollywood ever going to make a good one? I don't want to spoil this conversation today, so I guess that could be yes or no, depending. But we're doing a special bonus episode now where we talk about the new Mortal Kombat movie. Maybe you've seen it. It's been on HBO Max for a week. It's been in theaters as well. Here today to talk to us about the Mortal Kombat movie is our special guest, William Hughes. Will, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I'll spoil the conversation. This is not the movie that is going to reclaim video game movies.
What? No Oscars for this one?
I don't. Special achievements in Laser Eye, but also not really.
Not really.
The laser Eye don't look great.
Yeah, it was not very well executed.
So this is the, I think it's actually the third Mortal Kombat film, if I'm not mistaken. There was the, in the other episode that we recorded, we talked a little bit about Paul W.S. Anderson's Mortal Kombat movie from 1995. Pure campy cheese fest with, but pretty fun, actually. Maybe one of the better video game adaptations, actually, without quite necessarily rising to the level of, I don't know, good. Necessarily. But there was also a second one that was made a couple years later called Mortal Kombat Annihilation that nobody likes, as far as I know. So this is the third one. It is directed by Simon McQuoid, I believe is his name. He's a first-time director. And guys, what did you think of it?
So I want to say that I did not hate it as much as Ignati did in the review for the site.
Yeah.
I had fun at times watching it. And I think that Josh Lawson, who is doing the comedy relief, is not completely intolerable.
I think he's pretty good.
Most of my good, yeah. I had fun with him. That's most of the good things I have to say about it. It's plotted nonsensically. There's no Mortal Kombat in it, and it's edited really, really poorly. I feel like, which is like death for an action movie.
Yeah, and a point I did agree with in Ignati's review was I felt like a lot of the settings were just really unimaginative. You know, when they finally get down to the cave where they're all training, it's just these little rooms. You know, there's no, they could have made these huge chambers and they didn't. It just looks like, you know, a regular room carved out of the side of a rock, and then the other realm is also just a rock, and then the desert they walk through to find the temple is also just rocks. Like, there's really not a lot to look at in this movie.
Yeah, it's an amazing battle between the forces of Earth and the forces of, I think, Utah.
I will say I laughed very hard as a Chicagoan, and I think other Chicagoans will as well, at the fact that portions of this movie can take place in Gary, Indiana.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which is really funny. Probably the most nondescript place they could find in some respects. It is funny that environmentally it's so boring because obviously the Mortal Kombat video games, the backdrops are often these lavish hellscapes, or you're getting some really outrageous scenery sometimes, and there is like none of that in this, you know?
Right. Like, even in the 1995 one that we were talking about on the other episode, I was kind of expounding on how I kind of loved the temple where a lot, or the arena where a lot of that movie takes place. I thought that, you know, it definitely has that like spirit Halloween kind of quality to it, where it's just like, here's a skeleton on the wall. But I don't know. I kind of like that. And this movie didn't even have that. It was a bit of a letdown.
Like, there's no reason for a Mortal Kombat movie to have two climactic fights, one take place in a trailer and the other take place in a barn.
Am I crazy that trailer one was indebted, at least in basic concept, to Kill Bill Volume 2? Was I the only one to talk
about
that?
Heavily.
right?
Heavily.
Extremely indebted.
And they fucked up too, because like they did not rise to the level in terms of action choreography. Like, don't step to a scene like that if you don't think you can live up to it.
Also, I don't want to spoil anything, but when one of your characters has a laser eye, there's a very simple thing that could have happened at the end of that scene that would make the Kill Bill reference complete, one might say, the Kill Bill fight in the trailer reference, and it doesn't happen.
Oh my God, you're right.
Right? I mean, like, why didn't that happen?
Oh, fuck that. Boo.
So for those who don't know, Mortal Kombat, I mean, I feel like almost anybody listening to this probably knows what Mortal Kombat is, but you know what? Maybe you're just a longtime Film Club listener. Maybe you don't know what Mortal Kombat is. Mortal Kombat is a video game franchise. It's been around since the mid-90s. They are fighting games that about a mystical tournament between Earth and this place called, Is it Other Realm? Is that what it's called again?
Outworld, Other Realm. There are different versions of it, but yes.
It's basically, it's kind of a hellish alternate dimension. And in the storyline of the games, I guess I use that kind of loosely, although I guess apparently in recent games, the story has been a little bit more prominent than it was in the 90s. Is that true, William?
Yeah, the story in the last couple ones, and we should have had Sam Barsanti on here to talk about, because he loves those stories, but they are better. They are more fleshed out, and they are doing more interesting things.
Okay, but at its roots, it's like there is a grand tournament where fighters from Earth battle fighters from this other realm, and for the fate of Earth, basically. So you get a bunch of colorful characters fighting. I think most people probably know how a fighting game works in that respect. It's not the most conducive to making a narratively rich film, one might say. But I would say even by those standards, this thing really is extremely indifferent to anything like plot or story. Am I right?
After the first 8 minutes, yes.
Yeah. There's actually a certain elegance to the beginning.
Yeah, they posted those first 7 minutes online, which I think is really interesting because they are quite different from the rest of the film. Mm-hmm. And another thing I mentioned on our longer episode was that my main point of reference for a movie like this is like, you know, like Asian fantasy action kind of cinema, like samurai movies, kung fu movies and the like. And I thought that was a pretty decent samurai movie scene there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Yeah, up front. No, pretty good samurai scene.
It sets expectations that I don't think the rest of the film exceeds. I actually do think the first act of this film is stronger than everything that comes after it.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
So then I was a little confused by, like, wait, like, why can't we have that part back?
I genuinely think that's the part McCoy was most invested in. Mm-hmm. From, like, you hear him talk in the interviews about really wanting to, like, dive into this, like, the Scorpion Sub-Zero story. And it's not hard to see that there's more care being put in there than there are in some of the later sequences.
Yeah. Can I say something about that? This is one of the thirstiest movies for a sequel I have seen in a while. Yeah. They were more interested in setting up a sequel than they were about resolving the main conflict, I felt like.
I mean, yeah. I mean, this plays like the first act of a movie stretched to feature length in a sense. I mean, in a normal version of this, say the Anderson version from 1995, the whole assemble the team and go to fight the tournament stuff would occupy the beginning of the film. But because I guess they assumed that they could save the tournament for a sequel and that would be people would feel enticed to watch more, it is build up to there's a lot of fighting in this film, obviously, and I think that will be the main draw for most people watching this movie is the fights themselves. But it never gets to Mortal Kombat itself, to capital M, capital K Mortal Kombat, you know, which is, it just really feels like a cheat to, like, stay tuned till next time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, without getting too far into spoilers, it is a movie about trying to kill the other Mortal Kombat competitors before you have to have a tournament with them.
Which is ridiculous. Yes. It's ridiculous that they could do that too. The movie kind of the movie kind of like waves a little bit at them, like, well, that's definitely cheating, but you could still do it. You know?
Yeah.
ain't no rule against it.
Yeah, there's a line where it's like, well, one of the characters actually says, like, well, they're not supposed to do that, and someone else is like, well, they did. They're not into rules. And I was like, I mean, I guess they're the bad guys, so like
Yeah, so in terms of as spectacle, I mean, I thought that the effects in this were actually extremely uneven. I thought that some of them are actually quite good. I thought all the stuff with Sub-Zero and Ice I thought was really well done. And most of the gore is really fun. I mean, I will say that if you were disappointed with the 1995 Mortal Kombat because it was PG-13 and didn't deliver the gory fatality goods, this Mortal Kombat has your number. It is ready to give you that. If nothing else, that is what this movie delivers, is that there are some gory kill scenes. That's kind of...
I have an issue with that,
though. Okay, go on.
Which is that... one of the big appeals of Mortal Kombat back in the day is it lets you kill your opponents. Mm-hmm. That's like the big thing, the fatality system. I feel like the combat in this is extremely bloodless until it's time to trot out one of those fatalities from the games.
Mm.
Like, it almost like it turns a switch, like, oh, now it's time to have somebody's whole head and neck get split in two. And before that, it feels kind of weightless to me.
It almost plays like this is setting itself up for its own TV edit or something, where like you could watch these battles with no problem. They get to PG-13 and then you just cut away at the big gory ending, that sort of thing.
I think so. And like, I don't know what the appeal of that would be, because the fatalities do look cool.
Yeah.
Like I'm not immune to the charms of a razor blade hat, but but they do feel like it's like, oh God, we got to put the fatalities in here. Let's make sure they're in here.
Yeah. And so, yeah, some of the fatalities were pretty cool. There's a lot of F-bombs in this movie too. You know, they're definitely like wallowing around in their R rating on this one.
Reveling.
There was one that I liked where a character blew a hole through another character so you could just see her spine. For some reason, it blew out her guts, but not her spine. I thought that was kind of cool.
Very precise, Amy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, that is what I would want from a Mortal Kombat movie. So on that level, I have to say it delivers. I agree that I thought that Ignati was a little harder on it than I would have been if I was reviewing it. I do understand really all of his objections to it. I will say that the fights... I enjoyed. I think some of them are well choreographed. Some of them are a little incoherently cut, to be honest. I smell a little bit of post-production tinkering in this. I can't totally put my finger on it. And I, you know, obviously I don't know that this is true, but the final maybe 20 minutes of this movie feels, no pun intended, a little hacked to death, you know?
I don't disagree at all. I think there are a lot of like scene transitions, especially in the back half of the film, where you're like, oh, someone looked at that and thought it looked bad. So like, oh, we'll cut around it.
Right. And it's weird because like the movie does that heist movie thing where characters are talking about what they're going to go do. And then we see it happening as they're talking about it. You know, that's sort of like, here's the planning, but we're seeing the execution at the same time as the planning. But it does that with
the plans
fight
and
scenes.
Voiceover.
Right. Yeah. But it does that with fight scenes, which makes no sense. You know, we're like basically intercutting three of the climactic fights of this film. And I'm thinking like, wouldn't we want to just see these in full? Like, why would you reduce what is essentially the reason that this thing exists to almost a montage? You know,
I thought that was weird, too. Yeah. And I was also confused by that, why you wouldn't want to just watch all of these scenes play out, you know, in full, because, yeah, that kind of is the point of the movie, you know? And, yeah, I thought it was very strange how they condensed all those. And it kind of took this, you know, again, I'm looking at this from the standards of like a kung fu movie. Mm-hmm. And in a kung fu movie, you not only watch the fight unfold in full, you watch it unfold in a wide shot, you know, so there's no room for cheating.
Right.
And this mm-hmm. movie definitely took the opposite tack. That's how I'll put it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do think it's some of the fight choreography works, but I agree that this has not been made by somebody who is prioritizing our the fact that we can see these performers do what they're doing with maximum clarity. I think it wants to give us a kind of nonstop dose of ultra-violent cool, but I don't know if it even totally delivers on that front. It does in spurts, I would say.
It's also interesting because it's very it hops genres about every 10 minutes, which is very weird to me. So mm-hmm. we start with like the samurai movie, and then we have like a long 20-minute stretch that's essentially like a slasher/monster movie.
Yeah.
Where they are being chased by Sub-Zero and then Reptile. And they're not like Mortal Kombat fights. It's just like, oh shit, there's a monster after us.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then we're in the training montage, and then we get to the fighting movie at the end.
And then they cut down the fighting movie, though, like we were saying. They combine them all. It's weird.
Yeah, I don't see why this couldn't have been the first act of a movie that then gave us Mortal Kombat, other than the fact that they're just saving that for more movie. Like, it really is a blatant tease to keep watching, and a presumptuous one, if you ask me, because we don't know there's going to be more of these, you know? Like,
yeah.
I do miss the era when movies, when every movie in a prospective franchise was its own thing, and where sometimes they were actually burning through good sequel ideas just because they had no idea that there was going to be another one at that point. They were just like, fuck it, let's shoot for the stars and then figure out the sequel later. This is a movie that, this is like the epitome of somebody had profitable IP and said, how can we stretch this out like it's the last book in the Harry Potter series or something, you know?
I will say that the movie makes a compelling case that fighting an ice ninja would be very bad.
Yeah, I mean, they do fun stuff with Sub-Zero's powers, you know?
Seems hard.
Even if he is the world's sloppiest assassin, like, that guy seems dead enough.
Oh, for sure. William, you were talking about how it jumps genres. This movie did contain one of my least favorite cliches, which is, you know, having to kill the wife and the child so a man can have a motivation. Mm-hmm. That
oh, my God.
Sucks.
One of the most quick and literal fridgings I've ever seen in a movie.
Yes. It was a literal fridging. Oh, my God. But I feel like that was just one that they kind of threw into this soup. Like, of just it. So many, I guess it suffered from the same thing that a lot of contemporary blockbusters suffer from, which is that they take a relatively simple pulpy idea and then just complicate it until it's nonsense.
Yeah. This does not make a lot of sense on any sort of coherent narrative level, which again, I think would be less of a problem if it were more exciting and more fun. Maybe if it embraced the silliness of Mortal Kombat a little bit more. Make no mistake, this is a very silly film, but it's also one that kind of takes Mortal Kombat a little bit more seriously than Anderson did, you know, 25 years ago or whatever. At the same time, these are like paper-thin characters, even for Mortal Kombat characters. The only person who looks like he's really having much fun in this film is Josh Lawson, who plays Kano. And I will say that I enjoyed his shtick for what it was. He is maybe partially because he is just purely a bastard in this, you know? Like, he is, you know, he starts as the comic relief, but he is like, he basically is just, his motives are just purely selfish, and he does appear to be having a little bit of fun with the role.
Yeah,
I find myself feeling bad for Louis Tan, who has maybe the most thankless movie in a movie that has a lot of thankless roles, as the I guess audience insert character
who's who's new to Mortal Kombat, right? I mean, he is an invention.
Yeah, that's an original character.
Okay, I also enjoy Kano and. One thing that I liked about him, I thought that his character had one of the movie's, perhaps one of its more successful tongue-in-cheek moments, was that they also work the trope of, you know, having to look down inside your soul and really find your true essence of what makes you special, which, you know, is another well-worn sort of fantasy trope. And I thought that Kano was pretty funny. The way that he found the power within him was just by people, like, fucking with him until he got really, really mad. I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Was pretty clever. I laughed occasionally at because this is a modern blockbuster, and it's one based on a popular IP, which means that we are going to get tons of winking references to things that the fans like and things that the fans know. So there's tons of Easter eggs in this and tons of moments that exist only to remind you of this thing you previously liked. In general, I find that strategy to be pretty boring, honestly, but I will say I got a couple laughs out of it. There is a very funny joke about a particular cheap move that maybe one of the fighters does I have to admit I laughed.
Yeah, no, that I was like, oh, I see what you're doing there. I've spammed that sweep kick before.
Yeah.
Again, not to spoil, but this does end on one of the worst... Oh, can't wait to see what's coming next. Reveals I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
missed this guy, huh?
As people who have affection for the video game, you know, fans of the franchise, like, how did you guys feel about the kind of the characterizations in the movie and the way that the characters were used?
It's Mortal Kombat, so I don't know. I mean, most of them are not the most in the games, there again, I have not played the recent games. For me, Mortal Kombat for me is basically Mortal Kombat 1, 2, and 3. That's where I sort of get off that boat. So I don't have a lot of knowledge or affection for later games in the series, which I do understand have been slightly more nuanced in terms of characterization. But, I mean, it's a fighting game. Ultimately, their jobs normally are to kind of look cool and maybe at best have a certain appealing attitude. And I will say, even by those standards, I mean, like, the Raiden in this film is nowhere near as much fun as Christopher Lambert's Raiden in Anderson's Mortal Kombat, or even the version of Raiden you can play as in the video game. I feel like a lot of them are somehow managed, even though they are technically more fleshed out than their, you know, original, what is it, 16-bit predecessors. They don't feel much richer as characters.
Yeah, I will say I'm very disappointed that my favorite Mortal Kombat characters, Rambo, RoboCop, and the Terminator, are not in this film.
Yeah, where was
Freddy? I wonder why.
Where was Freddy Krueger? All
right? Right? God, I swear to God, in one of the new Mortal Kombat games, you play as Rambo, and he gets time powers, and then has to decide whether or not to, like, undo the Vietnam War.
What? It's,
wow. Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, he chooses to live with his past and try to heal. But
that's so funny, and it's so outrageous.
These are very, like, the characters in the games are extremely thinly sketched. Like, Liu Kang is good and heroic, whereas the character in the movie, what a weirdo. The Liu Kang in that film has, like, no sense of, like, personal space and is very strange to me. Like, that's Ludi Lin, I think, is playing the character. And I was like, this guy's giving me such a weird vibe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like they're all just kind of, they feel sort of just like generic placeholder characters for the most part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the good guys are sort of noble badasses, and the bad guys are largely like weird, angry monsters. And again, it's Mortal Kombat, so it's not like a rich text has somehow been butchered or anything. But if you're going into this thing expecting to have developed rooting interests, I mean, it's this movie will not deliver that for you.
Every character can be described in four words, which is true to the games, but still.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I asked that question because, you know, like, when you're talking about a property like this, the question is always, will the fans like it? Mm-hmm. You know, and this is one where I'm coming in pretty cold. And so I'm just kind of sitting there absorbing the spectacle. And there were some things about the spectacle that I enjoyed and things I critiqued. But, you know, if you asked me, like, will the fans like this movie, I'm kind of like, I don't know. So, yeah, I was wondering what you guys thought as fans.
I think they'll like it, honestly. I think that it delivers, for the most part, delivers what you could at least think you want from a Mortal Kombat movie. Although there's a part of me that also thinks the fact that the tournament never comes into play might piss off some fans, too. I mean, I think that they're... This is a movie that I wish that I could have maybe seen with a big opening night crowd, because I think a lot of the fatalities, people would have really enjoyed that aspect of it. But it does sort of feel like the type of thing that, like, if I were younger, let's say, if I were like if this movie had come out when I was a teenager, it's the type of movie that I think I would have watched and thought I liked, and then the more I thought about it, the more it would have annoyed me, and I would probably never watch it again. Or I'd watch it again and be like, yeah, this wasn't very good, you know?
Yeah, I'm on board with what Dad's saying. Like, it checks the boxes. Like, if like you had like a list of things you wanted to see in a Mortal Kombat movie that weren't people actually doing Mortal Kombat, it would hit all those points. It's not a good movie, but I think it would satisfy those urges.
Okay. I personally, you know, my favorite part about the 1995 one is Goro, and I was a little sad there wasn't more Goro in this
one. He also looks terrible in this one, too. I mean, he is this awful CGI creation, and, you know, I mean, I don't think that it's fair always to be like, you know, I mean, all CGI will age eventually, so there are CGI creations that are never going to look, that by next year are not going to look real, and that's okay. Goro doesn't necessarily have to look like a real thing for me to enjoy him in the same way that I can watch something like the movie The Relic from the 90s and enjoy that creature, even though the effects are now like now look hilariously primitive. But Goro in this is just, I mean, they don't take the time to even like give him any degree of like, he barely gets a cool introduction. you know? Like, the movie does not appreciate what they have in this four-armed monster, you know? It just feels like another special effect to get through to race to the finish line, you know?
I think that's very much the ethos of the movie. It's just like, they had a list. It said, all right, we need to put in this character, they need to look like this, and they all look right. They all look pretty much right. And that's kind of where it starts and stops in terms of what they put a lot of energy into. And it's, I don't know, I was only bored during the walking parts. Like, during the fights, I was like, all right, but there are a lot of walking parts.
There's also a lot of hanging out in a super nondescript cave, you know?
Oh, that cave sucks so much.
Like, why would you make that the primary setting of your film? I mean, there's just nothing interesting to look at in that place, you know?
I mean, someone's nephew made that cool, like, cloudy Tesla coil, and they needed to put it in the movie a bunch.
Ultimately, I think this movie's biggest failure is that it barely commits to having a lot of really loud, obnoxious techno music, and I don't feel like anybody ever screams Mortal Kombat in this film. So
They do at the very end when the end credits start rolling, and I was so disappointed.
That's too late. Thumbs down.
Too late.
The movie needs to open with somebody screaming Mortal Kombat.
I agree.
Scorpion says get over here. What more do you want?
Yeah, I think that right there is this movie in a nutshell. All right, we just want to thank our guest William Hughes one more time for coming on Film Club this week talking about video game movies. And you can stream Mortal Kombat on HBO Max now, or it is also screening in select theaters. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Film Club wherever you get your podcasts.
This bonus episode of Film Club was hosted by me, Alex Dowd, and by Katie Reif. It was produced and edited by Carl Blomberg. Our sound mixer and finishing editor is Zach Goldsboro, and our motion graphics designer is Julie Mullins. If you enjoyed this discussion of Mortal Kombat, we have a full episode of Film Club this week talking about video game adaptations in general. Thank you to William for appearing on that as well. You can find that on the site or wherever you get your podcasts. Film Club is going to be taking a couple weeks off coming up, but we will be back soon with brand new episodes. Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.